Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Mem Dalet. So yesterday we learned that according to Rav Huna, in the event that you have two contracts, one of which is dated earlier and one of which is dated later, that depending on the situation, unless it says beferish in the second contract that this contract is meant to be supplementary, then we view it as a choice. And he's giving a choice to a person in which you can either collect from the earlier contract a lesser amount, but you're able to be toref lekuchot, go after any buyers, or you could choose the greater amount, but then you won't be able to go after the buyers in the interim. The question is now, we had a case yesterday where there were two ksuvas. One of them was for 200, one of them was for 300, the 200 was dated earlier. So now, what Rav Huna had said there was, it's up to her. She can choose either ketuvah A and go after the lekuchas for less money, or she can go with ketuvah B but not go after the lekuchas and collect more money. That's what she said. That iboy b'hai gavya, iboy b'hai gavya. That's very interesting because Reb Nachman, and Reb Nachman is usually the absolute in terms of dinim like this. Remember, the halacha is always like Reb Nachman. He was the biggest expert. And it seems here that Rav Huna is assuming that Reb Nachman is wrong, because Reb Nachman says that wherever you have two contracts that are issued about the same sale, that the din is over there, shnei shtarot hayotzim b'zachazeh, if they have different dates, one is later, by definition, the second one cancels the first one. So now you're telling me, no, doesn't cancel. She can choose either one. I don't understand. So that means they disagree with Reb Nachman? That's very strange. No, come on, did you forget what we said about Reb Nachman? Didn't Reb Nachman, was explained by Rav Papa, Rav Papa explained that Moda Reb Nachman, the Osip Beidikla L'Tosefet Ktatvet. Let's say the second shtar that defines the sale mentions a palm tree that was included in the property, which was not mentioned in the first sale. So there Reb Nachman says, oh, well, obviously it was written to correct that question about who owns the palm. It wasn't meant as a cancellation of the first contract. It was adding the fact that, by the way, that's his too, and so on. But if any kind of legal problem comes up, he's going to be able to prove that that was his. But it doesn't mean I'm canceling the first contract. So Hakanami, in Rav Huna's case, he added 300 instead of 200. So that's the equivalent. Why would I think it cancels? It's perfectly consistent with Rav Nachman. By the way, let's just take a look at that din of Rav Nachman and how it was defined by Rav Papa Gufa. Omer Rav Nachman, shnei shtarot hayotzim b'zachar zeh, the second shtar cancels the first shtar. Why that would be true is not clear, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Omer Rav Papa, but that's only if there was no additional purpose in writing the second contract that we can ascertain on the face of the contract. But in the event that he added something, Moder Rav Nachman, the Yosef Bey, even a small thing, he's mostly for deca. So then he wrote the second contract in order to include the deca. What's the problem? Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that you had to add something that is defined in the contract. Because let's take a look at a case like this. Suppose that he writes one contract, it's on the same field. One contract is written as a sale, and one contract is written as a gift. Either A is gift, B is sale, or A is sale and B is gift. But it's exactly the same contract. So what happens then? There's a big difference between a sale and a gift. I'll tell you what the difference is. If it's a sale, so then included in the sale, Gavi, achrayut nechasim, included in the sale is the halacha that you can always go after a buyer because there is a property guarantee that is automatic on every sale. Today, you have to pay an insurance policy, right, Mo? What's that called? Title insurance.
Title insurance doesn't exist in Israel, but
right, okay. So this is title insurance. But in terms of the halacha, title insurance is built in to any sale, contractual sale, right? Okay. Actually, to any sale, because we assume he sold it to him with title insurance. Difference only would be if it's contractual, you can go after buyers. Now, so you'd say, okay, so if a guy accepts it as a gift, So then he doesn't get title insurance. So then why would he take the gift instead of the sale or in addition to the sale? Doesn't add anything. It does. Take this, Gavi, bar mitzvah. It makes the difference in the schus of a bar mitzvah. What is a bar mitzvah? Bar mitzvah is a neighbor who owns an adjoining field. Somebody goes and this neighbor finds out that his dear neighbor is going to sell the next door property to some jerk that he doesn't know. So comes along Richie and says to the Barnsdorfs, what are you selling to somebody else? Richie's island needs expansion. I want that property. That's called the bar mitzvah. And based on our parsha, which says the asita hayashar v'hatov, and that means if it's no sweat off your back, then you have to do what's right. Well, we tell the buyer, look, the next door neighbor who has a field wants to expand that field into the property that you're interested in buying. He wants to buy that for the same price. Do you understand what that means to him? It could save him $20,000 a year. Just in questions of having to schlep his tractor down the block in order to get to another. Like this, he can make it all one big farm. So therefore, you have to give up on your offer, and it has to be given instead to the bar mitzvah. So this is the rights of first refusal, essentially, that is built into the very fact that you are a bar mitzvah. But that's only because we can tell the buyer, look, to you, does it really matter? What if you find a piece of property down the block? So go buy that property. To you, it doesn't make any difference. To the next door neighbor, it makes an enormous difference. But you can't say that to someone who just got it as a gift. Well, why don't you get a gift from a field down the block? Are you crazy? This guy's ready to give me the gift of the property. You're telling me I should give it up because somebody else wants to buy it? Get out of here. So obviously you can't say Vasita Yoshevatov to somebody who gets a gift. Therefore, if a guy has two contracts, one is a sale and one is a gift, he's riding high and pretty. Because now if he wants to sell, so if this guy now is going to be attacked by the next door neighbor and he says, listen, I wanted to get this field. I'm sorry, sir, but you have no right. This is a gift. Waves the second contract, whatever one it was. This was a gift. There's no dinner bar mitzvah on a gift. Now, in the event that somebody comes along and collects the property, and now he needs to collect from a buyer, the buyer said, but I thought that was a gift. You can't come and collect from me because there was no title insurance. What are you talking about? Waves the other contract. It was a sale. And a sale includes title insurance. So because of that, whichever one was the second one is going to be adding something. If it was a gift contract, then it's adding the fact that I can escape the bar mitzvah. If it's a sales contract, see Richie's enjoying this, then it's given as my ability to be Toref Lekuchot, right? So in that case, even though it's exactly the same contract in terms of the field, it has all of the same measurements, no extra palm tree, it makes no difference because I can understand that it doesn't mean that I'm giving up on my previous rights. It means I'm adding to my previous rights. So that's another example, basically, of where Reb Nachman would certainly have agreed. So therefore, in the event that Pshita, if the first contract was a sale contract, and the second contract is a gift contract, then he's coming liapot kochohu de katav lemishum dina de bar mitzvah. He's adding an additional legal right, which is that I can stand up against a suit by the next door neighbor. And kol shekein, the other way around, if the first contract is a gift contract and the second one is a sale, which provides me property insurance, obviously that's given to me to add. But if both were the same, both were either sales or both were gifts, so then Reb Nachman says, look, why did you accept the second contract? Clearly the second contract cancels the first contract. Why though? How do you cancel? What do you mean you cancel a contract? What would be wrong with using this contract? I thought that if you have a shtar, it's commission after I do some investing, and it's a perfectly valid contract. We're just arbitrarily because I decided? I mean, what does that mean? So Raphram says, you know why? Because Emro Duy Odile, what the man is saying when he accepts that second contract is that the first contract was bull. It was a fake. That's weird, isn't it? No, it's not weird at all. I'll tell you why. That concept has been even embedded in law today in Israel. But it's called the Zichron Dvarim. Now, Zichron Dvarim works when somebody wants to buy, let's say, wants to buy a home. There's not yet a contract. You know, getting a contract, my God, for the lawyers to work out this detail, that detail. I don't have a contract. So what I do is I write out a Zichron Dvarim. We've agreed that this is the sale, and now it's in the hands of the lawyers. Okay. So I'm being attacked by a little boy. Okay. Bye. So now the question is, in those times, we don't have this, there's no such concept of the Zichron Dvarim, right? So now what happens? So here you've got Reuben and Shimon make a deal. There's no sofer handy. There's none, some of the concepts haven't been worked out. They're waiting to get the lawyers involved. Next week, they're going to write out a contract. What's it going to do? Reuben is really nervous about losing this field. So what he does is he says, listen, I'm going to write a contract. Okay. It's a total fake. I'll get some friends to sign on it as if it's a kosher sale. And that way, at least I feel some protection. Next week, get me the real contract. The next week, he gives him the real contract and the guy accepts it. So what is really happening, says Raphram, when he accepts that second contract, he's letting us know that the first contract was really a phony contract. It was just a Zichron Dvarim. Exactly. So this could happen all the time. That's why if he accepts the contract later, it's because, okay, he was waiting for the real contract. And meanwhile, he was making do with this piece of garbage paper, which he knew he could make trouble with to the other guy. That's all. Whereas Rav Acha said, no, it's not that. It's that it's a mechila. For some reason, the guy must have talked to him and he wanted to sell a field and nobody wanted to buy that field. He's got other fields to buy. I got other fields to protect you. And this guy doesn't want to buy. If there's any liens against my property, do me a favor. I'll write out a second contract from a later date. You see how much fields I still own. Will you do me a favor and accept the second contract? So he accepted the second contract. Fine. So he was mavater. So this is simply waiving your rights. He was mavater on the first contract. That's the reason. I mean, is there a difference? What do I care? Why? There's a big difference. Of course. I'll tell you three differences right off the top of my head. Okay. First of all, the question would be, these witnesses, according to the way Raphram was saying that the first contract was a fake, then that means that these witnesses that signed this contract, according to this guy, they just helped me out and signed a phony contract. Well, you, sir, who admit that you got witnesses who signed phony contracts, if you've got any other contracts signed by these witnesses, you have just canceled those contracts because now we know what kind of witnesses you have, according to your own words. Obviously, he can't possibly them for anything else, but he can certainly admit that any contracts he has are not reliable if they have this signature. That's according to Raphram, not according to Rav Acha. Is that a difference? Darn right it is. How about the question of, if the guy comes after him and says, hey, you know, you had a fake contract and you were eating the delicious produce from the field, which was mine. I want that money. Well, according to Raphram, he has a right to that money because the first contract was a fake. According to Rav Acha, it was a perfectly kosher contract and he had every right to eat that money. How about the tax collector? Who pays the property tax? So now the tax authorities are against them. For that extra month between the two contracts, the first guy, according to Raphram, is saying there was no first contract. It was garbage. He's the guy who has to pay the property tax. Mashenker, according to Rav Acha, he was the legal owner. He's got to pay the property tax. Anyway, that's off the top of my head. Now, getting back to the problem. All of this started yesterday with our question of what, in fact, is the din of collection. So we had learned yesterday, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that the father would only have a right to collect from the time either of the original erusin, or in that case where there was a ksuva that was written in his rishos before she was bogra, he could collect. And we asked yesterday, what about her? When does she get a right to collect? Does it from the time of the shtar, or is it actually from the time of the erusin? So my avi ala, what's the deal? Toshma, diom rev yinom shmuel mishum relozer rev shimon. Basically, it's like we said, Rav Huna said, and I think that's the halacha. The mona umatayim is from the time of the erusin, because that's the basic suva, which is the ma'aseh bezdin, and that's a given, that you could certainly collect that. Anything else, the tosefet, that's from the nisuin. Whereas the chachamim say, no, we think Rav Asi is correct. And in fact, both of them, she can only collect from the time of the nisuin. Once she accepts that contract, she essentially has waived all rights to the collection of her earlier rights, which were, they might say, bezdin. Fine. Halacha? Hilcha does, says the Gemara, that both are from the time of the nisuin, like Rav Asi, and not like Rav Huna. And now, a word from, hopefully, our sponsor, depending on what he's been drinking. Excellent. It's absolutely amazing. Zoom has put the doc right next to Richie to make sure that he does the job. And Zoom has put the Gabbai right next to the Rebbe again. It's like, it's miraculous. How does this happen? Somebody is looking. Is it artificial or is it deeper than that?
Uh-huh.
You think so? I don't know. You know, there was an old Yiddish song about Zoom that apparently there was a Kabbalah that this was going to be, that Zoom is able to show you who belongs with whom. You remember the song, right? Barnea, what's the song?
Zoom, golly, 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 Zoom.
Exactly. There you go. So the Mokar of Giluyim was always seen as Zoom. This was a Kabbalah Midiras HaKodmim.
Yeah, but we ended it with Zoom, 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 because the latency problems that were
seen. That was only then. Okay, Rabosai, ready to go. So now we're moving on to another one of the protections of a woman that the Torah offers. So we spoke about the concept of Mohar HaBetulot. We spoke about the idea of being Av L'Bito, Ben Ish L'Ishto. We talked about Pitui. We talked about the idea of Eines. We talked about the father's rights in terms of Benurea, Beit Avia, and in terms of taking care of her Nidarim. These are all issues of the complex relationship that put a woman out into the world without the natural protection and give her that protection, which became the Yesod of our Masechta in terms of Shakdu. We completely ignored, up until this point, another very important protection. And that is the ruination of a reputation by a vicious husband who has taken advantage of a girl and now wants to accuse her of not being all she was made out to be. How can a girl possibly avoid that? By the din of Motzi Shemra. So the din of Motzi Shemra provides a double fine. This is an amazing thing that the Gemara points out. You think that saying something bad about this girl is certainly not as bad as raping her, right? Wrong. The Motzi Shemra is a knas of 100 shekel just because of what he said. And the guy who actually rapes her only pays 50 shekel. And therefore, says the Gemara, this gives you, again, another jolt to your Western sensitivities. Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is much worse than the actual act that it might be talking about. It's amazing. So if that's the case, then over here, we need to move on to the double knas of a Motzi Shemra. Now, that is a very fascinating situation because the Motzi Shemra is a special gift, so to speak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes to a Jewish girl. And it keeps stressing the way that this is applicable to only a Bas Yisrael. So the first pasuk says that Asta Nivala b'Yisrael, in the event that she really had violated the marriage and had committed adultery, the special din is there that she is Chayevet Skila. Normally, that's not the chiyuv for the violation of a marriage. An adulterous act is a chiyuv of a regular misa of chenek. But over here, there is a special chiyuv that is chomur of skila. Why? Ki asta nivala b'Yisrael. Note that this thing goes all the way back to Shechem and so on, right? That it's all about the special kedusha of Yisrael. So now, there's a number of things that change there. First of all, is the extra chiyuv of skila. Secondly, is the fact that it has to be done el petach beit aviha. We take her out to her home, her childhood home, as if to say to her parents, you see what kind of girl you raised? So this now connects her to the concept of Yisrael in terms of her yichusim and the home that she came from. That special din is only true be Yisrael. That's one thing that the Mishnah. On the other hand, the punishment to the husband in the event that he was motzi lies on her and it wasn't true and he's unable to prove what he says. So then in that case, he gets, first of all, he gets malchus. There's a knas of 100 shekel. Why? Because ki yotzi shem ra al betulat Yisrael. That's why. So there's a special consideration of the fact this is not just a normal hotza'at laz. This is hotza'at laz on something very valuable. But why do I have to mention that? Obviously, it's al betulat Yisrael. That's what we're talking about, right? No. And that's what our Mishnah is coming actually to point out, that there's a big difference between a betulat Yisrael and a non-betulat Yisrael. What would be the difference? So let's imagine a case where you have a gioret who brought along a little child with her. Shenitgayra bita ima. This was a little child who was less than 3 years old. And therefore, later on, she is viewed as a betulah, because even though she was a gioret, as we said, if it was pochus bishalash, so then she's viewed as a betulah anyway. Then the halacha is that if she ended up committing adultery, she is mechuyev chenek. And there's no special din of petach beit av, obviously. There is no beit av. And there's no din of her having a right to the me'asela. So the special halachas, three special halachas, skila, beit av, or in the event that the husband had done wrong, the din of knas me'asela, does not apply to a child who is a betulah, but she's a gioret. Suppose her horata was shelo b'kedusha. Suppose the mother was pregnant when she became a gioret, and then she gives birth while she's already Jewish. So that would mean the leidata of this child was b'kedusha. Then the halacha is that there is a chiyav of skila, but she doesn't have a father. Because remember that the Torah considers the father to be not present. It calls his actual sperm cells water. Zirmat susim zirmatam, as Rashi says over. You know, you got a water spout. That's all he is, a big water spout. It's a water spout. It's like an animal. You know what? You're going to pay attention to who daddy is. Who cares who daddy is? It's just a way of impregnating someone. It's not important. So by saying that, it means she doesn't have a father. So how could she have a petach beit av? So forget about it. But the skila applies, but she does not have the right to the me'asela because it says betulat Yisrael, and she's not fully Yisrael. We're going to learn all of this from Psukim. Suppose she is completely Jewish. Her mother made a giur and then got pregnant and then had this baby, Bikadusha. Then she is totally like a bat Yisrael for all issues. Tosis points out, by the way, that this is not always the case. Because remember, by Chalitza, we said that there's a special halacha that it needs to be both Mikoach Av and Mikoach Ha'em. But, okay, that's a very special halacha that is learned out from additional pasuk. Anyway, how about a regular Yisraelite woman, and she has a father, but the father doesn't own a house? And it says that you have to take her out to Petach Beit Aviyah. What happens then? Suppose she has a father, but the father doesn't own a piece of property. Or suppose she has a house, but the father died. Now she doesn't have a father. Is that like ma'akev, the whole halacha? No, it's not. She still is chayev teskila, despite the fact that we're not going to take her out to a petach beit aviyah that doesn't exist, either because the petach is lacking or the aviyah is lacking. Lo nema petach beit av ela lemitzvah. It's just something that lechatchila, yes, you need, but it's not ma'akev the whole halacha. Now, so the Mishnah said that if she was horata shelo begedusha, but it was leidata begedusha, then there's a chiyuv of skila. How do we know that there's a chiyuv of skila? I thought we're saying that the Yisrael and Betulat Yisrael adds a special din, that it's only where she's fully Jewish. Omer Resh Lakish, I'll tell you why. Because the Pasuk unnecessarily says, a little bit silly, Uskalua anshei ira ba'avanim v'meta. I mean, by definition, the concept of skalua means that she's going to die. That's what the point is of skila, as we see from so many places. It's not that we just want to show our objections. No, that's what the Arabs say. Yeah, you know, we were just throwing rocks. We didn't mean to kill anybody. Righto. So the idea over here, therefore, is that the meta is unnecessary. What's that additional word, umeta? That's coming to include an additional meta to tell us, do not understand the pasuk of Yisrael to mean that you also need conception to be Yisrael. And that's the rabot or atashalo b'gedusha v'leidata b'gedusha. So, okay, so then if that's true, then why is there not a chiev of the mea sela? And why is there not a chiev of malchus on the husband who lied? So then milka nami milke, u mea sela nami mishalem. Why does the Mishnah say that there is no chiev of mea sela? I'd explain that. Because that's why we use this curious way of adding her. Vameta. Vameta means I'm adding only vis-a-vis the chiev of misa, but not to tell you anything else. I'm only telling you how to die through skila and not through chenek, but I'm not talking about the overall concept of the halacha, which includes also the me'asela, and which includes also the malchus for the liar and the motzi shemra. That does not apply because the Yisrael is still true, and only vis-a-vis the umeta do we have a reboy. Excellent. Okay. Now, how do we know that it's coming to include only the conception being shelo b'gedusha? Maybe this idea of Yisrael, that you're now balancing between the totality of Yisrael, but not vis-a-vis meta. So then maybe it means not vis-a-vis meta, even, I mean, vis-a-vis meta and not in terms of anything else, maybe it's only coming to be marbe horata v'leidata b'gedusha, and it would still be true that the Yisrael means total Yisrael, except for horata v'leidata b'gedusha. Oh, come on, horata v'leidata b'gedusha. I mean, she's totally Jewish. How can you say that? That's a given. Okay, so then maybe say the Torah is including everybody, even if horata v'leidata shelo b'gedusha. Maybe the once you're saying umeta, so then you're saying that the din of Yisrael does not apply to the Misa, right? So then if there's a din of Skila on a Nara Ha-Mu'urasa, so then it should include even if she's a Gioret, even if Ora Tavaleta Tavot Shalom B'Kedusha. How do you know that you're supposed to draw a line? Because then what's the point of Astan Nevela B'Yisrael, right? The point of B'Yisrael is that the Yisrael is adding something, so it's got to be adding this halacha. Amar of Yosi Bar Chanina. Suppose someone is motzi shemra on a woman who has no father, then there's no chiev of mea shekel. Why? Because it says v'natnula aviha nara. But if she's a yitoma and doesn't have a father, so prat lezo she'ein la'av. This one is not included because she doesn't have a father. Masiv Rabbi Yosi Bar Ovin v'tem Rabbi Yosi Bar Zvida. We learned in a brisa that since it talks about ima'en yima'en avia, now this is binogea the mefate, that if the father absolutely refuses to give his daughter to this bum who seduced her, and that double lashon, ma'en yima'en, comes to tell me that a yitoma is included, meaning somebody else can be ma'en, if there is no father. So ma'eni ma'ein means that even a yetoma is included in this parsha, and that's l'rabot yetoma l'knas divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili. So is that not true over here as well, that aviha na'ara should include the concept of a yetoma? Hu motivla, hu mefarekla. He, Rabbi Yossi Bar Ovin, or maybe it was whoever it was, Rabbi Yossi Bar Zvita, we weren't sure. He was the one that raised the Shaila, and he was the one that was mepharik, that answered it. It's talking about to a case where first he was Baala, and then she became a Yatoma, and it's true. If at that point there was no father, then it's the same. But if she was at the time of the actual Baala, she was already a Yatoma, then Eino Chinami. It's no Chiyav because there's no Aviyah Na'ara. Rava says, I disagree completely. Of course, you're totally Chayav, even if she's a Yatoma all along. How do I know? From the other word, Yisrael, be my. Midatani Ami, Betulat Yisrael. It says over there, Keotzi Shemra, a Betulat Yisrael. What does that teach us? Only a Betulat Yisrael, but not a Betulat Gerim. So then, explain to me. Every ger, by definition, is an orphan. As we just said, the Torah was mafkir the genetics of the father. There is no father. Fine. Okay. So then, what would be the point? I don't understand. If even a Jewish girl who has no father is not included, why do I need a pussy to tell me that the Gioret is not included? Anyway, she would be excluded even if she were Jewish because she doesn't have a father. So why do I need this extra pussy to tell me Betulat Yisroel v'lo Betulat Gerim? So Iyam bet b'shlama ki I gavna b'Yisroel m'chayev. You're telling me in the equivalent case of a Jewish girl who doesn't have a father, that she is chayev. Okay, then that explains why I need a pussy to tell me that a ipso facto orphan, because she's a gioret, in this case, if she hadn't been a gioret, she would be, in fact, included in the din of motzi shemra. So I need the pussy. But if you're going to tell me, aliyam would be yisrael, ki I gav na potter. So, I mean, use your brains for heaven's sakes. If yisrael is potter, I would think that a gioret is chayev. Of course not. Furthermore, and this was a Gemara that we had a number of times before, and it was that beautiful understanding of Reish Lakish. Amar Reish Lakish, Hamotzi Shemra al HaKitana Patur. Why? Because it says, V'notnu l'aviyah na'ara, and it's spelled with a hey, Hana'ara, the girl's father, instead of spelling it the way it always does, Hana'ar, the boy's father. And that's because Nara Maledi Berakatub, where the Torah calls a girl a boy, it means that she's so little you don't know the difference. So basically she could be a Kitana as well. But where the Torah spells it out for you, this is the mocker of that expression, spells it out for you. Says Reish Lakish, here the Torah spelled it out for you with the extra hey. And that means that we're talking about only a fully girlish hey. There we go. And that hey makes all the difference. Hey, girl. And that's the reason it says Nara, which means that apparently, you're telling me that it's only because it spells it out for you? And if it didn't spell it out for you, what would I have thought? That a ketana would be included in the parsha? Excuse me? It says beferish. If it turns out that there are witnesses that she was mizana, excuse me? She's a ketana? And we're going to take her out of the Petach Beit Avius Kalua. Ketana does not get any punishments. It's ridiculous. Ketana lav bat onashimi. So anyway, it's clear from the Parsha that it cannot be referring to a ketana. So why do I need it to spell it out for me? And the beautiful answer that we saw before, so lovely, is on the contrary. Reish Lakish is saying the whole thing was based on that. Since when I read this Parsha, it's absolutely clear to me that there is no way it could be referring to a katana, because it says uskalua. So do you think it's a coincidence that the Torah spells out the word na'ara with a hey? No! That's why it spells it out. Because since we really are only talking about a na'ara, it wants to let you know, a na'ara is a full-scale hey. But anyplace else, if it doesn't say that hey, then it comes to include a ketana. That's the whole point that Reish Lakish was making. That koma ha koma komshin emar na'ar instead of na'ara, afilu ketana bim mashma.